Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
All right, here we go. Approaching mid-February here. It is another episode of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I'm Brady Hull. Coach, it's a few days after the Super Bowl. Did you go to a party? Did you watch it at home? How do you view the Super Bowl, the commercials, the halftime? It's always a very controversial topic these days. All the other football games are fine, but the Super Bowl, you're getting judged on how you view it. It's very interesting.
I did. Our neighbor has a nice setup, kind of barn, man cave, weight room, golf simulator, the whole works,
nice.
Big screen.
Yeah, so that's the way to do it.
Being that I didn't have a particular interest in this game other than seeing a good football game that two teams have kind of clawed their way back from mediocrity after being at the top of the world, that was kind of my only interest level. But I can't say that I was watching every play that closely. There were a lot of conversations going on. I was playing around. We played the waste management course, because the waste management tournament had just finished up right before the Super Bowl. I don't know if you're aware of that. And it went to a playoff. So we kind of repeated the playoff with us four playing the actual waste management course. It was cool.
That's something to do, surrounding the game, because there's so many things that go on during this game that it's really not about the game. It's about everything else.
Yeah, so many commercials, and so what does it take, 10, 12 seconds to take a shot, and then you turn back around, watch the game, and have some good conversations, some good food. It was a lot of fun.
Did any of the commercials stand out to you? Did you get a chance to really see any of them? Because I thought there was a lot of promos this year, mainly just promos for shows.
Commercials, I was definitely back to the simulator,
yeah,
or conversations with people. Like, I wasn't interested in the commercials. Had it been just, my immediate family or something like that, then I could have done that. But, socially, I can be kind of awkward if I'm not on my game. And so the last thing I want to do is just lock into the TV because, that's going to make me even more awkward. So I was making a real point to, talk to people and play the golf sim game.
Well, this year it was strange because obviously you had the halftime show with Bad Bunny, and a lot of months before that, we were told it was going to be very controversial. And so then, Turning Point? Is it Turning Point? They created their own thing, and people are like, oh, go away and go watch that. I've always been anti-halftime show because I watch football all year, Coach. And when you're not coaching it and playing it, you're watching it as well. Yeah. So for me, it's just funny that suddenly we're supposed to have an opinion on a musical act during a football game. I've never done that. I don't do that 99% of the time. But during the Super Bowl, if you hated it, then you're probably a bad person. If you loved it, you're probably a bad person. It just depends on what side of the aisle you're on. And then Turning Point comes out with another halftime show. And so for me, I'm like, I'm not here to view music videos. I'm here to watch football. So I'm not going to tune away. I guess I'll just leave this on in the background. But either way you slice it, kind of a controversial topic.
I agree. It kind of, like for me, try not to get political here, but it kind of agitated me that that's where our country is at, that like we have to, or some people feel the need to take, the Super Bowl and put it in a direction. And I don't know the details of, because I didn't watch that and I don't really read up on that stuff. But, I did hear, and then there was conversation there that the Super Bowl halftime show was going to be political in one direction, and so we're going to have this other thing available. And then I just thought it was kind of sad because to me, I think like the Super Bowl is not controversial by itself, and it seems like that there would be plenty of options for a fairly central political message or no political message halftime show.
Imagine that. Yeah.
celebrating being an American and the Super Bowl is so quintessential American. That's kind of how I felt about it. So I didn't see either one. Like, I didn't see either show, and I'm totally unaware and can't comment on what, you know, what might have been.
You're not bumping Bad Bunny on the way over here to the podcast. You're not listening to that in the old Jeep, Coach? You're not blaring that?
No, I don't. I don't even. I'm not aware of. I might know, like, I might recognize some of the songs and actually like them, yeah. Or I might not. Like, I don't know. I think the moniker is funny. I don't. I wonder how he came up with that, or somebody else did.
And that's the thing.
That
takes
courage. I could not imagine.
You got to be a pretty confident person.
Oh yeah, y'all. You guys are calling me Bad Bunny. That's me. I'm going to go by that. So I don't know how that came about, but that seems kind of like ultra manly to just roll with Bad Bunny as your name.
I've always been this is how I've been since day one. Even if it's my favorite band out there, I like rock music. I like, you know, the Chili Peppers performed one time at halftime. They were terrible. Mm. I mean, it's awful. It's sped up version of your songs. It's all about the setting and the, you know, Katy Perry came out on a tiger and all that. So that's what it's about. It's not. And so when I go to musical acts, like I like to go to the small venues and see my favorite bands with no extra stuff. It's just the instruments and the singers. So I always just find it funny that I can be that guy all year, except for during the Super Bowl. If I say, oh, this is a bad halftime show, it's, whoa, your politics do not align. Mm. So it's just fascinating to see people's reaction on this stuff.
Yeah. The idea that there has to be a musical number is kind of, I wonder where that started to occur, or if it was always that way from Super Bowl I. I wouldn't know.
I've always suggested other options. Like, we're watching sports, so why not have something sporty during halftime? I suggested jousting. I think that would be fun. There are professional jousters out there. I think we should just have that going on during the Super Bowl.
I feel like that's not political. I feel like people would stay tuned in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and you can always jump away. I know now Turning Point has their thing, but my wife used to jump over to Animal Planet. They had the puppy halftime show, puppy halftime bowl, or whatever it is, puppy bowl, and then the kitty halftime show.
Oh, wow.
So if you just want to watch dogs, they're basically trying to get them to play football. It's a magical thing, and there's really no politics in it. I don't think. Maybe there could be.
I'm not aware, right?
What did you think of the actual game? I know that's like the secondary portion of this, but Seattle found a way to get it done. Defensively, they were amazing and had a really good run game, and the Patriots kind of struggled.
Yeah, Seattle got the trophy with what's got them advancing all year long. Just outstanding defense, suffocating defense. You know, I really love a low-scoring defensive game if I'm into the team that's playing defense well. Other than that, it's kind of it was kind of a boring game for the fact that I wasn't interested in one team or the other winning. You know, I wasn't kind of look like any other fan looking for offensive plays. I always think it's fun. We don't have a big crowd at our spring game here at UNC, but other places I've worked, we would have 1,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people at a spring game. And you're playing, you know, it's your own team out there, you know, both teams. But all the cheers, or 90% of the cheers, come with every offensive play.
Oh, sure.
First downs and touchdowns. Yeah. You get a defensive play, and it's just kind of like, ooh, you know, like everybody's worried that the offense isn't moving the ball. So I was just kind of watching as a fan in that game because I didn't have a dog in the fight, so to speak.
What is going to a Super Bowl party like for a Division I head coach? Like, are people constantly like, what did you think of that play and what would you have done there? Again, you like the people, I'm assuming. Yeah. You go to a party, you're enjoying it, but there's got to be people that are like, I mean, you're a football guy. And then there's got to be the side conversations of a lot of people that know it all. Yeah. Oh, they shouldn't have run that play. What is that like for you, Coach?
Well, in this particular case, all the people are people that I know really well and see a lot. And so it can be, at other times when I've been around new people, it can be a little bit distracting for the game, or people feel like they can't talk to me about something, and that's even more awkward because I do like football and I like talking about football. I get a little uncomfortable being the expert on something that I don't have much insight to. Like, I don't feel like I really know what's going on when I'm watching an NFL game because I'm used to watching the All-22 video. We've talked about this before.
Way different.
I don't even know, like, you know, for a coach, it's really frustrating to watch games on television in a professional way because you can't even see the cornerbacks and the safeties most of the time, or wide receivers at times. The cameraman will cut them off. And then the other thing about this particular part is there was an NFL player there, a current NFL player, and so he took some of the pressure off. We were able to split some of those expertise questions between us.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I've always found that I've never been a big party guy, like a big Super Bowl party guy, because you go and you get half the room is there for the commercials, halftime, whatever, and they have opinions on that. And, oh, this is a boring game. And I'm like you. I like defense. I like a good run game. I like watching that stuff. So for me, it wasn't necessarily that boring. There were stages of it for sure, but you do get a lot of the fans. They're like, oh, this is a terrible game. Did you want it to be 50 to 45, I guess? But it's always just fascinating to get other opinions going on during the game. So it's that's why I've always been kind of more of a, I'm just going to watch this like I watch every game throughout the year.
Sure. What I was really hoping for was game on the line, Seattle in a goal line situation. And I was going to see, does the Seattle offensive coordinator have the guts to throw the ball in that situation? Probably not, right? You don't want to go down in history twice for repeating that mistake. Even though Marshawn Lynch isn't on the team anymore and all that stuff, different situation. But do you risk that as an offensive coordinator kind of going down in infamy, right? And so I thought, okay, if I'm the Patriots defensive coordinator, I'm bringing, to put it in video game, I'm bringing punt block on the goal line, right? Like, you're not covering any, make them throw the ball in and dedicate 11 to stopping the run. That would have been kind of an interesting dynamic and something that I know would have crossed that offensive coordinator's mind. I've been there where even, something not that iconic, but you remember seasons past or years past, similar situations where the call you made didn't work out, and then, or even somebody else, or the history of that opponent, and then you don't want to duplicate that. You don't want to enter into the wrong historical annals.
I always think of you now when I think of that play that we're talking about with not running the ball with Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson throws the pick. I always think of you now because of what you say is. You're always going to get criticized because the play you ran, if it obviously didn't work. Yeah. So next time you'll just run the one that works.
Do the thing that would have worked.
Do the thing that would have worked. So I always think of you on that side.
Because giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch in that situation several years ago, that would have been an automatic touchdown, right?
Yeah.
According to
100%.
Fans, right?
Yeah.
It's like I was talking with Tanner a couple of weeks ago, and who was it? Oh, when the Broncos passed on a field goal opportunity.
Yeah.
And he asked me, well, why didn't they just, do you think they should have just taken the three? And I was like, I didn't know that there was a button that existed that gives you three. You still have to snap, hold, and kick successfully, and there's a percentage on that you're going to not make it, right? And so as a coach, you're always kind of playing those percentages. The chance to get a first down is 83% on fourth and one. The chance to kick the field goal, which is only worth 3 points, is 97% in that situation. So, but as the head coach, you have to do the thing that works or accept the criticism. We get that.
Yeah, I mean, if they would have gotten the first down, there's no guarantee that they score a touchdown. There's no guarantee that they don't turn it over at that point either. So there's so many different things. And Tanner's a baseball guy too. So it's, if you want to walk a guy, just guaranteed, you're going to walk the guy. You can't just go over to the refs and say, hey, we're taking three, by the way. Go ahead and put it up there. Why do we even waste time kicking the field goal?
Well, he owned it, as he does. Good sense of humor. He was like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, touche. You got me on that. That's true. There's not a take the three option.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Everyone's got a take. And that's what's weird about the Super Bowl too, is everyone has a take that normally doesn't have a take on football all season. So you have, and then you have people like me that are not music people or commercial people, and suddenly we have takes on the theme of the commercial or whatever the halftime show was.
Football coaches, have it rough because of that. Everyone kind of, thinks they're a football coach. I've watched hundreds of basketball games with people who are into the basketball game. And at no time do they talk about the coach's strategy in that moment being the thing that failed, right? You make baskets, you get stops, and the coach is part of the team, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, great job, coach, you won, or, oh, you guys lost. But in football, it's like you really get way too much credit when things are going good and way too much blame when things are going bad. It still does come down to tackling and covering. When nobody is out there at this level of football and higher, nobody is out there running things that are not sound, so to speak. You're doing things that are tried and true, have been done through the ages. You can pull up film of NFL teams doing every defense and offensive play that we run.
Well, and like in basketball, there's only so, I mean, there's only so many guys on the floor. There's only so many schemes you can run. At the end of the day, it comes down to, were you getting the ball in the basket? And was this the team you're playing just red hot, even though you're defending them? In football, it comes down to a lot of those little micro decisions throughout the game that you're judged on. Basketball, you don't have a lot of time to have the – there's no going for it. Right. You know, there's no, we called a timeout there. We shouldn't have. We should let the clock run. There's none of that stuff in basketball.
As a fan, I would be hard-pressed to – if you took 10 random players from the NBA and put them on a court to play 5-on-5, I would be hard-pressed to know whether they were whether they had prepared and practiced together and were running plays or were just playing basketball, mm-hmm. you know, pick up basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
You could never do that in football. You couldn't take 22 players from the NFL, put them out on a field and put some sort of game-looking product together. It would be a mess.
We have Coach Smiley on this podcast a lot, and one of the questions I asked, we were going deep into game management and how he views it. And one of the questions I had was like, how many times throughout the game do you actually call set plays? Or do you know, there's got to be a flow to it, and there's times where you just go. I could never ask you that question. How many times do you just run the guys out there and say, guys, just get open, you know, just see what happens.
In football, you couldn't even pull off an offensive play. You have to, you couldn't even pull off a legal alignment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They
have to have instruction on every detail. So it's just a completely different type of coaching job going on.
Well, Coach, let's get into some football talk, some Bears football talk. Last week we talked a little bit about the second signing day, and you opened up a lot about how important that was specifically to your side of it. Some people, depending on the program you're looking at, this is the secondary approach, but you loved this period. And we talked a little bit about maybe the theme and what you guys were looking for. And I don't know if we want to get into every single name because listeners are not going to know every single name. But as far as, you know, how many players you're bringing in, new Bears, and maybe just kind of what that theme told us here of how many different positions you guys were going after.
Right. We're always going to make, or I shouldn't say that, we always have, and it always has been the plan since day one and continues to be the plan, to base our recruiting foundationally on Colorado high school prospects. And that continues to pay dividends for us. I know that our talent level in relation to our peers in the Big Sky, the gap has narrowed and is getting better and better. I don't know that the teams out there in our league, and if you pay attention to it, there's a lot of them that are living in the portal, living and dying in the portal, losing a lot of kids to the portal, pushing a lot of kids into the portal, and then bringing in a lot of – that's the bulk of their recruiting. That continues to be the case at the vast majority of college football programs, FCS and higher. So I don't feel like those teams have a lot of opportunity to get better strategically with their recruiting plan. You know, what's going to change for a team – mining the portal from one year to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Those are short-term fixes, short-term solutions, new team every year. Everybody's trying to do it like Indiana and Ohio State and all the very top of the game that has the most money, which is opening up a huge opportunity for us. The Colorado kids that we signed this year, so we signed, we added 19, a total of 31 new players. We only took five from the portal. And four of them are Colorado kids coming back home from other Division I schools. And then the fifth one, the fifth portal guy, was another warm lead, a guy who called us because he had been – he's from Washington, Coach Mike Regal, our receiver coach. He's a receiver from Washington who went to South Dakota State. And Coach Mike Regal is from Seattle. And so, you know, the street agent and coach reached out and said, hey, this kid, you know, went to South Dakota State, feels like he needs a fresh start, wants to be somewhere new and a little closer to home, playing in the Big Sky. What do you guys think? And so those were the five portal kids. Hmm. We did not open the portal to mine the portal at all. We completely were going after high school kids, and we would consider portal kids if they contacted us.
How does it work on the portal? Is there, you know, you get on your computer and you coaches have a link they can go to look at the portal,
right,
and see who's all on there, just like a database there?
Right. And so, yeah, let me tell you how it works and why strategically it's not for UNC. So when I was at BYU, for example, and there are several schools in the Big Sky that have the same dynamic, we had nine full-time recruiting staffers mining the portal at all positions, making initial judgments, and then forwarding those portal kids to the position coach. So if I was coaching linebackers or safeties, I coached a couple different positions while I was there. Then I would daily get this feed of portal kids that the recruiting staff had found that they thought I should be – they were good enough to pass on to the next level, which was my level, right? We don't have that. We don't have even a recruiting coordinator. We don't have a staff of one to be mining the portal. So there's that piece of it where we're going to be behind, or at least we're going to have to sacrifice our ability to recruit the high school kid, because that takes work and effort and time. And we're already putting in incredibly long days and hard work in the recruiting cycle. The other piece is, because those portal kids are so well known, right, because of all these dynamics where you've got these large recruiting staffs mining the whole portal for options, there's a lot of money. The portal kids know their value. They have value, and we don't have that money. And if we did, and the little bit that we do have, I'm putting it towards our current players, because I think retention is the right strategy for UNC.
Mm-hmm.
And so things seem to be pointing in the right direction. We have the lowest number of guys going into the portal in the conference, or we're at the low end, right around a dozen. There's only three other teams there with us: UC Davis, Montana, Montana State. So that's good company to keep. I consider that a good sign for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then so that allowed us to really go after the high school kid. We probably signed more high school kids than anyone in our conference. I didn't actually check on that number, so I might be talking out of my rear end here. But you know the numbers at Colorado State and Colorado, and how many high school, especially Colorado high school kids, they have not signed. For us to have signed 19 out of our 22 high school kids from Colorado, I think is huge for the state. Huge for anybody that cares about Colorado high school football, and it continues to pay dividends for us because we are getting a better and better product from the state.
Coach, with signing day, obviously I know you guys are working well before we get to that day. You're in constant, when it's legally allowed or whatever, for you guys to contact guys. So it's not like an NFL offseason where it's easy for us to say the Broncos struggled with the run game. Look at the free agent running backs, go call on them or draft a running back. For you guys, especially now with the portal, that can be fluid. That can change every single day. If you're getting a hint that maybe one guy is going to leave, oh, that position group's going to be weaker here. What does that look like as far as when you're talking about signing day and who you're going to get? Is there a board up of like, we need to get better, younger here at this position? Or is it throughout the year, you're just looking for the best players possible?
Oh, really good question. So for high school recruiting, we want the best players in the state regardless of position. We, you know, theoretically are following a plan every year for high school recruiting where we would add about 20 or 25 high school players, one at each position. So five offensive linemen, a couple of corners, two or three wide receivers, a running back or two. That's kind of your guiding light, mm-hmm. and how you should build a program so that you have, again, theoretically, you have a senior class 4 or 5 years from now that would, you know, transcend through the whole roster. You could have a senior-laden starting team, football team out there, and that's typically what great college football teams have. But obviously, we're paying attention because attrition, retention, injuries, things like that happen. And so you do have positions where you start to get really young or really old, and you have to anticipate that. For us, that's going to be a junior college fix for the most part. Again, we are wide open. We've had six now in the last 2 years, Colorado kids who have gone elsewhere, Iowa State, Kansas State, San Diego State, South Dakota State, Indiana State. These guys are coming back to the Bears so that they can play with, in many cases, they've been recruited by our current team. They're former high school teammates. So we're great with that. But when we go seeking, let's say we get, okay, we got a bunch of senior running backs And we need some young guys or some more experienced guys in the pipeline because the rest of the roster is freshmen and sophomores, right? We need that kind of junior-senior dynamic that the portal might offer. But for us, because the portal is so well-mined, we're looking for abandoned mines. And those abandoned mines right now are the junior college level and the high school level. But if we need an older kid, we got to go to the junior college level. And so that made up the second majority of our recruiting class. First, it was the high school kids. And then I believe we took 8 from the junior college and then 5 from the portal.
So the high school kids side of it is kind of like, this is our formula. Every year, it's not changing. Even though we lost quarterbacks, we lost whatever, we're going to go each position. We're just going to fill it. Then you're viewing the portal as that's where we go more to immediate need. If we suddenly, Gibbs, Castelli, you lose 2 starting quarterbacks. Okay, let's look at that perhaps.
No, we don't view the portal. We're viewing the junior college.
Junior college.
Yep. The portal is we're looking for who comes to us. Now, obviously, we've got coaches that are going to be curious and getting in the portal and trying to, you know, find some options.
Mm-hmm.
But
That's like an emphasis of, hey, we have to go here
right.
to fill these positions.
I'm not tasking our recruiting coordinator to do that. I'm not tasking our position coaches. We meet on recruiting every single day, and that question doesn't come from my mouth of who's in the portal available at that position. What I say is, hey, we need an experience. We need a veteran guy. Who do you have? And I'm expecting junior colleges because from day one, I've talked about this being fundamentally the way we operate. High school kids are our priority. Junior college kids where needed. And then the portal, okay, well, you know, we're not against taking portal guys, but they've got to be a fit. And the last thing I want around here is a team full of guys that are kind of renegating, right? Like if I've got Mark Cuban money like Indiana has, or I've got Ohio State money, I'm going to hire a team of really good renegades, you know, and that'd be fun. We're going to, you know, we're going to do it the NFL model. But the whole, it's football's funny, right? Because every football coach, there's so much movement, and these assistant coaches don't see themselves. All assistant coaches across the country don't really see themselves as being in a place 5 years from now. So the high school recruiting already is a tough challenge for a guy who's looking to kind of move up through the business, right? As a position coach, and they do the lion's share of the recruiting work. And so what you have here are these colleges all over the place that are kind of copying it like those with the most resources. I mean, you would never like if you were some kind of startup company in Greeley developing software apps, you would never say, well, how does Microsoft do it? Let's copy them. You know what I mean? But in football, for some reason, that just seems to be the way. Like, okay, Indiana wins the national championship. That's what we have to do. We have to go and get a bunch of seniors out of the portal that are production based. Well, do you know how far down on the recruiting ladder food chain we would be if we said, let's do it just like Indiana, because there are hundreds of other schools doing it like Indiana, and they have more money than we have.
Wow. You know, that's fascinating to think about it. And as we transition to the running back position, I have a weird scenario. Let's say I'm moving up the ranks. You hear about me. I'm talking to you on this podcast, and I just know running backs. And you're like, wow, Brady knows stuff. You hire me as a recruiter day one today, February 11th. What is my first task? How do I even go about that? Am I starting to reach out to schools now? What is that process like?
So you're talking about the context of the question is just the recruiting piece of your job.
Yeah, like I'm an assistant running back coach or whatever, right. But my big job is I'm recruiting.
Okay, so recruiting is 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
We are current, even though we just signed our kind of immediate class.
You're already,
and
you've already.
Kind of, yeah, we've transitioned to a new class. We are already actively, like I can name for you, especially the super local kids, promising 8th graders, 9th graders, freshmen, sophomores, juniors. So we're always looking at a group. We have our camps every summer. That puts a lot of kids on the radar at a young age, right? So, but we, you know, our ability or even our appropriate use of time to actually be contacting and recruiting those guys in the 8th, 9th grade, that's not going to make any sense, right? But we're aware of those. So this time of year, we're really looking at, you alluded to it, managing our own roster. So if you are the running back coach, what does it look like? How many freshmen do you have? How many sophomores? How many juniors? How many seniors? What is the talent? What are the talent levels of each of those players? Who do you project as all-conference caliber, NFL caliber? These are, you know, guys that have NFL potential if – there's always the big if they develop themselves fully, if they buy in and do all the right things, do they have that potential? And to win the Big Sky, you have to have those guys at every position. You have to have NFL prospect. When we won the Big Sky at Southern Utah, we had 11 guys go to the NFL that year. So that's the type of, you know, I mean, you've paid attention to UNC. To my knowledge, there's never been anything like that, where you have 11 guys signed contract. No. We had three in the combine, which is more than most Power 5 teams have every year. Any year, three at the combine is, I mean, the combine is like the top 400 players in the country.
Yeah.
There are 300 Division I schools, you know, between FCS and FBS. So to win the Big Sky, you really have to be kind of on that level. So that's the first standard we look at, is how many NFL potential players do we have? And then how can we balance out our class? So you, as the running back coach in this time of year, would be doing that. And then you begin to look at, number one, we want, okay, what can we find in the state of Colorado for that younger part of our class? And if we do need something older, okay, now you're mining the junior colleges to see, okay, what kind of upcoming sophomores are there at the JC level that we might have a shot at to get them here as juniors next year?
Well, and just for the record, I'm not going for Terrence Grant's job. I'm not, like, that's not what this is. This is not a rough interview here, but it's it's just fascinating because, like you said, it's a never-ending job.
Terrence Grant was elevated to our assistant head coach role. He's doing a heck of a job.
So he could use an assistant then. So this could be an interview.
He could use an assistant. Yeah, so the moniker around the office for the assistant head coach or the associate head coach, which I've been, it's a tough job because you have some leadership responsibilities, but you're also one of the guys. And so behind your back, they call you the ass head coach. And so you would be the ass running back coach.
Okay. So that's something to think about. Yeah. Well, all of this just fascinates me because there's never really a real beginning. You know, if you bring in new coaches, there's never if I hire someone here, there's a day one sales guy. Okay, just go make calls. Mm-hmm. You're just going to go cold call for a while. And then you just learn about the radio station, all that stuff. For you guys, there's no beginning because you're always in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the end of the season, you're in the middle of it. At the beginning of the season, you're in the middle of it. All the recruiting, everything that goes into it.
Right, and there are so many different prongs and directions that each of our jobs take on a daily basis. There's the academic side. There's the life mentoring side with our position groups. We call it position control. And so you're always you're controlling your position in terms of academic progress, in terms of let's call it life skills, mental health. And then we've got the weight room, which we have a strength and conditioning staff, and they do a great job. But if they're not getting encouragement from the position coach and buy-in, mm-hmm. backup from the position coach, that thing can become a mess, you know, of low effort. And so we spend a lot of time as position coaches encouraging our guys in that way, holding them accountable, making sure they're there on time, working hard, gaining the muscle mass and speed and strength and agility that we ask them to gain. And then there's the recruiting side, right? And those kind of make up the major prongs of what we're doing. And then all of that takes a precedent every day over the fun thing that we all got into coaching for and thought coaching was all about and fans think it's about, the actual game, the mm-hmm. strategy, right? Like, we all love the strategy, but that's the last part of what we do. The plays are not magical. The plays don't work if you don't have the players. So it's all about recruiting, retaining, and developing the players on a daily basis. And then, okay, let's dive into kind of what our offensive defensive philosophies are and the technique and the strategy and all that fun stuff. If you're out there playing video games thinking you want to be a coach, that's kind of that's what people think is the biggest part. And that's the smallest part of what we do.
Everything I hear here is just really putting that fire out, you know, because I come in here to the podcast. I'm like, all right, I'm going to wow Coach Lamb. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to tell him about my plan to never punt and to throw it every time. And you're going to say, dude, come on to our staff. But everything you keep saying, I'm like, wow, there is so much to it. One more note. Now, we're seeing the craziness of the transfer portal. We're seeing, you know, kids that are promised money, and you know, but it was never the head coach that directly reached out. It could have been somebody recruiting, or it could have been an assistant to the assistant regional manager or something like that. when you say, hey, these guys, they're trying to build up their resume too. They're coming on, and if they come to you and they suddenly they're bringing running backs in left and right, and you have the best running backs, how much of a real fear is it that guys go rogue and maybe do try to cheat the system a little bit so that they can move up the ranks as a position coach, and they're getting you all these great running backs, but maybe they're doing it in ways that are not 100% on the up and up.
So in my first year here, we, from the time I got the job, hired a coaching staff. We had a record number of players leave. I wasn't aware of that because I wasn't paying attention. But before I ever got here, there were 38 guys in the portal between Coach McCaffrey's release and then my hiring. And so we just had to add players as quickly as possible, and there was no time to kind of vet each of the players. And so the position coaches really did go rogue by design, and we ended up with a lot of bad fits. And fit is something that I would say, if you talk to other coaches around the league, I'm known for that. Whether they think highly or poorly of me, like, I'm a culture guy and I'm going to drive culture. Those that have worked with me or around me in the past know that that's how I'm going to intend to build the program. And so I thought we took a major step backward in our first recruiting class. So many guys that didn't work out were poor fits, taking us in the wrong direction culturally. And it wasn't really those kids' fault. They were not recruited in the way that I would say kids need to be recruited. There needs to be kind of a recruiting and then a de-recruiting where you're clear about expectations. And I didn't have the time to do that because we just had to add as many players as we could to field a team, so to speak. Now, that would be impossible to do as a position coach. We don't even bring a player on campus unless I've seen the player, ask specific questions to the player's high school coach, junior college coach, the player themselves, interviewed the player, interviewed our coaches about all the interaction that they've had, checked the transcripts personally, checked the film personally. So there is no chance for position coaches to go rogue. There are plenty of position coaches that kind of, they're trying to pull it the direction that they think philosophically, but all my guys are behind me and they believe. It's just, you know, everybody's trying to do a great job. And so there are times when I have to reel it back in and say, look, you just found me the best position guy that you could. That's not our philosophy. Bring me the guy that in 3 years, everybody's going to wonder where we got him. Don't take the guy on our recruiting ladder rung. Don't take the scraps that everybody else is leaving behind. Find the kid that we can develop. Find the kid with NFL height and speed. We'll put on the weight, strength, and in some cases, the skills. If we don't believe that we can do that, we have no chance to win at UNC.
Wow. That is fascinating just to hear you go through this and what I see nationally to try to connect those dots. And I might be making a push here, Coach. Randomly, people think that I am. I'm not even kidding on this story. This is a side story. Because of all the stuff that we do, the podcast, I will get high school kids that will message me and say, hey, Coach.
You got an in.
Yeah, and then they send me, I'm not kidding you, right now.
They called you coach?
I've had that before. And I'll write back. I don't correct him. I correct him. I'm like, hey, man, I'm not a coach. I'm an idiot radio host. But I've had guys send me their tapes, their videos.
Maybe we could get that recruiting staff. Maybe we could get a recruiting staff of one here. I can get you a t-shirt or something. We can make this official.
I'm not going to air this out loud. This was literally a message I had the other night. It's a basketball dude. And I've already corrected this kid, and he keeps sending me videos. And I'm like, dude, I'm not a coach. But, you know, maybe if I get enough of these, I'm going to be like, Coach, I got a guy I've been scouting because he's been sending me these videos. He's a basketball guy. Might not work for football, but I got the videos.
That's awesome. And I can see you light up about it, which is so cool.
Awesome.
That, like, I love being in a profession that people, you know, think is cool. And think that they would be able to do it. One of the really cool dynamics of during my time at BYU, because the head coach Kalani Sitake and then the defensive coordinator Elisha Tuiaki, they were both raised in Provo, and so they had a lot of the homies, the kids that they had grown up with that were, you know, maybe kind of coaching high school football or not, or just interested in coaching, but they would come over and just sit in with us, and that's kind of a lot of those guys. We're Polynesian guys too, and there's a big family culture and inclusivity, right? And so these guys would come, like even Elisa's brother, Leka, is a really intelligent guy, amazing musician, loves football, and they would come over and kind of just sit in on meetings. Well, they would be expecting one thing of all this kind of football talk and strategy, and it would be like if you came to UNC this morning and sat in on our meeting, which I go to right after this, we're meeting with our strength coach every Wednesday and our athletic training staff, and we go through every player on the roster to talk about their progress in the weight room and then physically any ailments that they have. And I just, the disappointment that I saw in you know, Elias' brother Lekka's face or some other people that were just randomly sitting there, they're like, this is boring. this is what you guys do?
We're not
talking about, you know, the nuances of cover two versus cover three in our meetings.
Oh, yeah. Like as a fan first, I always just fantasize about that stuff. Like, yeah. I'd like to go sit in on a meeting with the coaching staff. The more I talk to you, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's just so many things that we wouldn't even get to the fun stuff.
This is actually work.
This wouldn't even be that. Yeah. So it's fascinating just to kind of go through all that. Coach, we've only got like 4 minutes left. I figured let's do the position review for the running backs next week because I want to give it the time that it deserves. But
it's a real strength of our team.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to.
We've talked about starting with O-line, D-line as the strength, and then the running backs are right there in that unit. So I would love to talk about them in more detail with more time.
I don't want to force it because Tanner's going to be standing out there waiting for you to come in and talk on Good Morning NoCo. And I don't want to breeze through that. But forgive me because sometimes I just, on these podcasts, I'll hear you talk about something and my brain just goes to, wow, that's fascinating. How do you deal with this? So these podcasts, every single week, they're just so enlightening to me.
I hope that anybody who listens is like, man, Brady always takes it the direction that I'm wondering too, because I hope that we're putting out a compelling product. I've told you before how powerful this has been with a lot of parental feedback from our current players. And I always hope that they're continuing to listen and understand, you know, how much work and dedication we put into these players, how much we believe in them. That stewardship of kind of continuing that parenthood role while these young men are at such a pivotal time in their lives. And so I do hope we're able to keep those listeners. So you have a really important job for the Bears because if people are tuning out halfway through, if the parents are tuning out halfway through, then that's really my target audience. I hope we're able to keep them around.
Well, and so you're telling me don't quit my day job. Stay here. No assistant running back coach thing in the future, at least as of today. I think that's fair to say.
I think the feedback I've always gotten is people love the directions that you take it and the questions that you ask because it's questions that they have. And so, you know, I think that's probably still the case. And, you know, Terrence Grant at this point, you got a pretty tall task to actually bring value to Terrence's dailies.
Well, I'm going to see how many more videos I get, and I'm going to be like, Coach, I got a list here of guys. It is just with me because I do two different things. You know, I do the regular sports talk show, and we get deep into stuff, but for a lot of that, we're moving quickly and we gloss over things. In these podcasts, you really do try to get a real glimpse of what it is that a head coach goes through. It's not just waking up and saying, we're going to run the ball more, you know, or we got a new play design. There's so many things that go into it. And that part of it, I really admire it and it really fascinates me. And I don't think I'll ever fully understand the job, but at least what you do here gives us somewhat of an idea and I love it.
I hope that was the idea from the start, right? It's just that's why we called it Football 52. Is I've always known from talking with people in the community, many people not even trying to offend me, but it's always a little offensive. I get my feelings hurt when I feel like they think I only work like during the season.
Yeah,
you know? What do you do? I've literally got that question before.
What do you do in February?
Yeah, what do you do in the off season, Coach? You're going to be playing a lot of golf. I'm like, you know, I love golf. I have a lot of things that I love to do, including spend time at home, you know, with the family and stuff like that. But it is a year-round job. And when cell phones, you know, happened and texting became part of recruiting, it's a 24/7 job. And there are important tasks going on every day of the year. And so just that insight of, okay, what is this morning's meeting? Every Wednesday, we have the same meeting. Strength coach is there. Training staff, medical staff is there, and we go through the whole roster, every single player, and talk about, you know, opportunities, challenges, who's doing well, who needs a little bit of a gentle push. I think that's insightful. I think for people to listen and hear that is not something they would probably, understand on their own without seeing the inside of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you get on social media and it's just, and I'm not saying that we should just get on and say, oh, well, they're not good, but we're making an excuse. You don't realize how many things they have to go through. But when you get the social media troll, the Warriors, whatever, that are just like, just going into that guy doesn't know how to call a play,
right. But
man, he knows all this other. It's just, it's eye-opening to get into some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think if I were to come on here and we started the show by saying, okay, hey, coach, what do you do in February? Well, I practice my speeches. Because the team should never quit. Yeah. Every time you lose, it's because you quit. Damn it.
And you're not a big speech guy.
And I also are practicing my blue steel looks because Coach Cignetti has had a lot of success with that. So I need to make sure that I know how to glare at the players in the camera. Like, that's kind of, I feel like I could get more fans to the game if I actually talk like that. Kind of bring WWF type environment to my coaching mystique. I feel like people would buy into that and be like, that's exactly what the Bears need. But I have to be honest, I don't think that's the key to winning.
Yeah, to be a caricature or whatever.
Right.
I think those things have to be natural. I don't think you guys have so much going on. I just don't think somebody wakes up one day and says, I'm changing my look. I'm going to do that. Like, that's going to happen with everything that's in your brain during the game, after the game, before the game, all season, all off season. I just don't think you have the time to think about those things. And those that probably do are doing radio. that's the kind of stuff that they're doing. Coach, I always appreciate it, man. I love these podcasts so much. But no, seriously, we met a couple of running backs last year, so I'm excited to build on that. Next week, we'll kind of put the full focus on that running back position. We did, we started with the offensive line. We talked D-line last week, and now we'll put the focus on the running back. So I'm looking forward to that next week.
Me too. Super.
All right, Coach. We'll let you get over to Good Morning NoCo with the fellas, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.